Let's get to Sam Cosentino, who joins us, sportsnet.ca, soon, keep refreshing it, waiting for your prospects list to drop at some point today. And Sammy, thanks as always for stopping by. But before we get to the list and the players, you know, headlined by someone like Owen Power, who we would have seen play locally here in the GTHL, before we get to the list, give us a snapshot of what's happening with the World Juniors in Red Deer. It's the 14-day quarantine. Doesn't sound good. Give us the update of what's happening with Team Canada right now.
Well, I guess the Russian version would be, I'm sitting at home. Well, you know, on the conference call last night, Scott Salmon was there as the vice president of national teams, and you had Dean McIntosh there, who's the event organizer, along with Andre Tournier. So there's questions posed to all three of those people. And so basically the kids are forced to sit in their rooms here for, I think it's 12 more days. At that point, on December 7th, the expectation is that they'll go back on the ice. Between December 6th and the 13th, anyone who's going into that bubble will have to be with the group and test negatively on three occasions for COVID-19. Any positive test after the 29th of November, which I think is the day, 2 days from now, anyone who tests negatively at that point will be automatically eliminated from participation, either, you know, as test, part of the sorry, staff or as a player.
Anyone who tests positive will be eliminated. You just said negative. Just want to make sure.
That's right. Yeah, okay. Anyone who tests positive. Sorry about that. So there's a lot of different moving parts. There's a lot of different dates that are involved in all of this. But I think the one thing that we're forgetting to do is humanize it a little bit. You're talking about 19-year-old kids, and in the case of Shane Wright, a 16-year-old kid, is going to be stuck in a hotel room for basically 14 straight days. And yes, there are support systems in place. You know, there's video games and quizzes and stuff that they're going to do as a group. Zoom workouts are going to do with whatever equipment is allowed to make its way into the rooms. And then they have basically an app in terms of the mental health questionnaire that they fill out on a daily basis that goes to an independent company. It's monitored anonymously by Scott Salmon and Andre Tournier should any of the players need some help. So lots of different things going on, but I do think that it's important to humanize all this and think they're still kids. They really are. Yeah.
What does it mean? One of the, you know, the big questions that's sort of floating out there, and you wonder about how much impact this would have on it, is what's the update with Alexis Lafreniere? Now, many would say he shouldn't go in the first place, has nothing to prove, there's nothing there for him, he's a pro hockey player, get on with your career with the New York Rangers. But does this do anything to the idea of Alexis Lafreniere joining Team Canada?
It doesn't yet, but we're getting close to that point. So as of yesterday, Scott Salmon says the conversations are still ongoing with the Rangers, with Alexi, and with Hockey Canada. And essentially what has to happen is, at least as of last night, he was still in New York City. So based on the rules everywhere else in Canada, he would have to come back and quarantine for 14 days before he's able to do anything with Hockey Canada. The fact of the matter is, that December 6th is really kind of the drop dead for him to be with the group. So while the quarantine may extend beyond that, when the team goes into the bubble on the 13th, Alexi will have had to be part of the group from December 6th on. He will have to test negatively on three occasions. So really, that's where it stands with him. So if you get to December 6th, you don't see Alexi Lafreniere, you know he's not going to play. A lot of that hinges on the start of the NHL season. Obviously, the Rangers want him to take part in the full camp, and they want him to hit the ground running with the Rangers whenever it is the NHL season starts. January 1st, I think all of us would say it's not likely for it to happen then, but how far into January will the season start? And that will play a big determination if we get that date as to Alexi's participation.
So will we see a lot more European players and QMJHL players, you know, creep into the first round now that they're playing? I was talking to Brennan Othman's dad actually last week, and he actually sent his son to the Swiss League to be playing in the second league because he played there as a youngster. So is this going to have a trickle-down effect where we see some guys that could be first, second-rounders dropping down just because they don't really have a big body of work?
It is going to shift, Stu. There's no question it will shift a little bit. A lot of teams now go and scout the draft minus 1 year. So, you know, the big event there is obviously the under 17 World Challenge. You get the Finns, the Russians, the Swedes. You have three different Canadian teams involved there. And so you get an opportunity to kind of open your book on what that player is like. So a lot of these players that are being looked at, that's their body work. So Chaz Lucius is a great example. He's on the U.S. under 18 program. He's hurt with a knee injury, hasn't played a game. He was brilliant last year with 31 goals, 50 points with the under 17 program, but also brilliant in that tournament as one of the leaders there with 10 points. So here's a guy who's kind of living off of what happened last year. That can only take you so far. At some point, they're going to have to get on the ice, be it through practice, be it through modified games, whatever it is, and really start to prove that you've taken that next step forward. So there are definitely guys in that situation, and no doubt it's going to cause some slipping and sliding and you know, the elevation of some players as well.
Sam, I'm always sort of taken aback by the breadth, like the whole scope of what it is you're trying to do here when trying to, you know, organize kids, you know, from all these different places and rank them. And I'm just hoping you could give us a little background into how the list is compiled, like how you go about putting this all together, knowing, well, particularly this year, I imagine so much harder. I am interested in general, but I guess this year, how is the list compiled for you?
Really, really good question, Borny. And honestly, it requires. So I've been lucky enough to have a relationship with Iceberg Analytics. They've helped provide me with some tools, as well as Instat have provided me with a really good video tool. So the incorporation of those things to be able to look at video and say, all right, here's what I'm hearing about this guy. You know, here's some of the things that are being said about this player. Yeah, I remember him from under 17, so on. And so you try and mix and match it together. You talk to scouts, you talk to agents, you talk to coaches, general managers, you know, my brother, my wife, and just try and get a feel for what it's all about. So honestly, the last 2 weeks, I've been on the phone a lot. I was in a conversation with Dan Muse, the head coach of the under 18 program this morning. Mel Pearson, I spoke to him for an hour. He's the head coach at Michigan the other day. So you can only do so much. Of course, you want to try and corroborate what you see in video, and that's obviously your department, Borny, and then see what the people who are on the day-to-day. Now, you have to accept that there's going to be bias with that, no doubt about it, but this is what we're presented with, so you do your best.
One of the things, and this is going to be such a challenging year, it doesn't seem, you know, right now as if this is going to be one player sort of taking off and grabbing that first overall spot and cementing it early. Like we saw, you know, Alexi Lafreniere after the tournament last year, after the U20, like that was it. And you talked about this plenty. That was, okay, that was it. Flag in the moon. This is ours. Like that was his spot to lose, number one, after that tournament. Not so sure we're going to get the same thing this season, but early on in a... How should we characterize it, Sam? In a draft year filled with defensemen, it looks like there's going to be, all indications point this way, a defenseman selected first overall, someone that fans of the GTHL probably watch playing with the Mississauga reps, and that's Owen Power.
Yeah, it looks that way. And if not him, I mean, the top three guys on my list, Carson Lambos, who plays for the Winnipeg Ice, Simon Edmondson, who's playing with Frölunda's junior team, would be the next picks in terms of defense. And so that's a little bit different than last year, where we saw six defensemen go in the first round. That number is likely to be in the 9 to 12 range in the first round this year, with Owen Power leading the way. 6'6", left shot defenseman, 200 pounds. What's amazing is the freshman class that Mel Pearson has put together at Michigan is truly unbelievable. You talk about Brendan Brisson, Thomas Bordeleau, and then three projected first rounder in Beniers, Power and Kent Johnson. But getting back to Power, I mean, here's a guy that's been trusted in every single situation. You know, he had the overtime assist and the game winner last week that Bordeleau scored. His first game, 3 points in an 8-1 win over Arizona State. You know, he's put up basically point per game numbers. But not only that, he's accepting top matchups against them. He's playing in the power play. He's playing on the penalty kill. So here's a guy really whose breadth of game just, you know, a short time into Michigan season has really given the coaching staff a ton of confidence that they can play him in all situations. Rarely does that happen at the NCAA level with a true freshman who's so much younger than all the competition he's playing against.
Well, when did it start to come together for Owen Power? I mean, I can remember, you know, OHL Cup talking to his reps coach, Harry Evans, about him, but there was no conversation about this kid's going to go number one in the NHL draft one day. Like, when did he really pop, Sam?
Yeah, I know. I think it was last year where he started to pop. And then, you know, you look into the progression. And so what are your eyes telling? Well, we know he's a pretty good player. We know he's going into a good program. We know he's going in as a young player. And then for me, I don't think there's any question that the start of the season he's had has really elevated him in the conversation for being that top guy. And his name is not going to move from that conversation, Jeff. So like anyone else, it's a steady progression. And what you hope is, if you're the parent or if you're the player, that your son, or as a player, you're popping right at that time in your first year of draft eligibility. We know that doesn't happen for everyone, but at the ripe age of what he is now, at 17 years old, I mean, the guy's 6'6", 205 pounds or whatever it is. I mean, physically mature at that age only goes to show you that, geez, this guy might play at 230. He moves unbelievably well in terms of his agility, high-end, speed in terms of skating, quickness, all that kind of stuff. That's really impressive. I always think about the Stanley Cup. You think about Victor Hedman. You think about what an impact player he's been for that organization. You know, not only great leadership qualities, but his ability to play a ton of minutes, his ability to play defensively, add offense. Owen Power looks to be a guy who down the road could be that type of player. And those players are really hard to find. That's why Tampa hasn't let him go since drafting him second overall in 08.
Going back to the human side that we were talking about earlier, do you think players that catch COVID, do you think that'll affect their status? Because we don't really know the long-term effects of it, just like a knee injury or something like that. Will that affect anyone's draft status behind the scenes, you think?
Well, as time goes on, Stu, we're obviously learning more about this. And talked briefly yesterday to Jeff Blair about these long-hauler situations that we're just starting to learn about. So that can definitely have an impact on what happens down the road. Generally, I think the population, myself included, looks at it as if you're a younger person, you're probably not going to be, you have a little bit more kryptonite to what this means, especially in the short term. But you're right, we don't know the long term. So let me give you an example of what happened last year. Edmonton Oilers select Dylan Holloway out of Wisconsin, 14th overall. I was on a Zoom call with him well before the draft, where he admitted he had had COVID as it was running rampant through the Wisconsin campus. So it didn't seem to bother the Edmonton Oilers at that point. But as we start to know more, as time moves on, everything remains fluid. If we do learn about those things and how it impacts a player, there's no question that might be the case. I mean, really, Greg was discovered that he had it on November 8th, already drafted by Ottawa. He's made his way to Canada's World Junior Camp. He might be someone along with Holloway that's worth watching over the long haul here.
Sammy, going back to the prospects list that you put together, I was wondering how much of the organization of the players is based on your own preference. Maybe you like a more physical player or a more handsy player, or based on what you expect NHL teams to covet most.
You're right. It's a bit of both, Morty. And the thing for me is I want to do the best I can to see as many players as I can with my own eyes. So when I look at my original list of 32, I can go through probably about 12 of those guys. Either seen, even if it was in their minor midget days or as their 16-year-old year playing across the CHL. So I'm pretty lucky that I have a nice knowledge base of what's been seen with my own eyes for that large group of people. Last year, obviously, it was bigger with 19 of the 31. I'd watched every single one of them play live at least once, and so that's huge. But I think you look at the NHL, you look at where defensemen are, you look at kind of the resurgence of the size conversation. I liken it a little bit to what's happening in the NBA. If you go back 10 or 15 years ago, we looked at a center as kind of the big luggage guy who was in the middle to block shots and to put in easy hoops. Well, we don't look at that guy anymore. When you look at Kevin Durant, who's stepping up beyond hitting threes and hitting them at 35% rate, who's also bringing the ball on occasion up the court, we're kind of looking at our defensemen as being those type of players now, where they're not just big stay-at-home, nasty, physical shutdown guys. They're a big part of what's happening offensively, either by taking away time and space, creating it, initiating the rush, joining the rush, supporting the rush, whatever the case might be. Their ability to shoot the puck, walk the line, keep pucks alive. All of those things now are being part of what we're talking about with some of these bigger defensemen. So you look at defensemen, you say, oh, yeah, it's the small guy, it's the new age guy. Well, I think we've shifted back a little bit to say, Oh, yeah, that new age small shifty guy who's an offensive guy, he also comes in that big size package. And we're going to see it with this draft class this year, the Roman Schmitz, the Brant Clarks, the Owen Powers, so on and so forth. So you have to go along with what the trends that are happening in the NHL. You have to trust your own eyes, and you have to kind of get a feel for what teams are thinking about the type of players that they like and what their GMs prefer.
With Sam Cosentino. Sam, I have to ask you about a couple questions here about Toronto Maple Leafs prospects. Most notably, Rodion Amarov, who was Maple Leafs' first-round selection, 15th overall at the most recent draft. I remember, you know, when the pick was made, you and I kind of looked at each other with Berkey at the table and kind of said, that is a very Toronto Maple Leafs draft pick. You know, you look at Amarov going to the rink and... I mean, he looks young. Like, this kid looks like he's, you know, 11 years old.
Yeah.
And you say, that kid's going to play hockey with men. And then he puts on his equipment. And so far this season, Sam, Amarov has delivered. What can Maple Leafs fans expect here? And what do we expect out of him at the World Juniors?
You know, it's really funny. And Borny, you'll love this because you were part of you know, the resurgence of all the talent and the skill that's going into the Toronto Maple Leafs organization. But when I went back and looked at that pick, you just saw how pissed off everyone in Toronto was, saying, oh, we need a big, tough, physical guy. We need a Kalen Gooley. We need this type of player. But the expectation that the fan base forgets sometimes is that player is not likely to come into your lineup and impact that right away. And those big, tough, nasty, physical people tend to be cheaper in the free agent market, tend to be cheaper in the trade market. So I think Kyle Dubas said, we're going to keep on keeping on. Because in order to get skilled guys, it's a real challenge. But not only that, we feel we have all the people in our organization to help further develop that skill. So we're going to keep along that path. We'll supplement the rest of our lineup with those guys that are a little bit cheaper, that can bring us the physical, the nasty, the Zach Bogosians. You know, Wayne Simmonds maybe sort of on the downside, Stu, of his career, but still a very effective guy in that regard. So when I look at that Amarov pick, it fits perfectly in what Kyle Dubas and the Toronto Maple Leafs are thinking, just how much they value the skill and want to keep that train rolling.
Going back to last year's draft, you know, I didn't really get, you know, the pundits really picking apart Quinton Byfield's game. You know, I think some people are even comparing him to maybe even Hugh Jessamyn. So you know better than us. What's his ceiling and where do you see his, who do you see his NHL comparable be? For me, I think he's going to be a great player and I think he'll be in the same conversation as Lafreniere in a couple years, but you know more than us. What's your assessment on Byfield with his ceiling?
The sky's the limit. And when I look at Quinton Byfield, yes, he's put on some muscle. He's added a bit of weight. I think he's at 221 now, or at least he was when he went into the protective environment for Canada's World Junior team. But to find a skill set where a guy who can handle the puck in tight, who has that size, who has that skating ability, really, the world's his oyster. So I think, Stu, when I look at realizing his potential, it's Quinton is going to be the only guy who determines that based on his work ethic, how much he's willing to learn and listen to the workout group, to the veterans that will no doubt put him under his wing. And that's why it was a great fit for L.A., even though I didn't pick that to happen. When you look at a guy like Kopitar, you look at a guy like Carter, and now you're starting to think of these guys can be really good role models. And I think Carter's the perfect example of a guy who was probably maligned a little early in his career. Now he's stretched out his career to be one of the best players in franchise history. And then you move forward and you're thinking about, here's a guy who, awesome hands, good skater, really good size. Maybe that's the perfect guy for him to learn under, who, almost like Quinton, was maligned a little bit at the start of his career. So when it comes to Quinton Byfield, everything is sitting there right in front of him because he has things that most other people in this world don't have. He has the size and skill set. That marriage is a really difficult thing to find when it's at such a high level. And when you add the skating into the mix, Quinton will take his career as far as Quinton wants to take it. But for me, the sky's the limit, and he's just starting to turn the corner in terms of his physical maturity. So the upside is massive for this young man, massive.
If I can jump in on Byfield really quick, one of the stories, Sam, that we didn't get a chance to talk about on draft day with Byfield after L.A. took him second overall, I mean, this kid grew up in a really wonderful and supportive and intelligent and heads-on environment, and I'll give you an example. Sam, you know this one. Quinton Byfield, There was a lot of talk about Hockey Canada wanting him to, or expecting him to, apply for exceptional status to go into the OHL a season early. And you watch him play with York Simcoe Express. You know this guy could have walked into the OHL. And it was his mom that said, no, he's not ready yet. He's not going into the OHL a year early. He's fine where he is for his development. Now, that is amongst elite-level minor hockey players, not just Ontario, anywhere. Like, everyone's parents are just like, rush to the next level. My kid's a superstar. He's getting into the OHL early. And here's a parent saying, like, we've seen the opposite, right? Like, we've seen kids, you know, get promoted by the parents, you know, get him into the OHL early, all of it. And here's the Byfield family saying, he's fine where he is, Sam. And he was.
Yeah, he's a guy who's obviously put in the work. I mean, when you look at him, he doesn't have quite the baby face that I saw going back to when I watched him play last year. And then I look at the confidence he's walked into the camp with. And although you're not there, in some of the media sessions, he's sitting there and he's got kind of more upright posture. He's joking around with the guys a little bit. He looks really comfortable in that environment. So I think Quinton has really set the tone for himself to push the limits to wherever he wants to take it. I mean, already has put in a lot of work to add the muscle, to add the strength. I think there's a lot more room still to add to that big frame he already has, and that's a scary proposition because when you can move like that with hands like that and that kind of size, he can go out there and own the ice. You really can.
Sammy, you've been at this for a while now, and people see you around the rinks and probably recognize you. Yeah, you're on TV, here and there. I have to imagine, do you get people lobbying you? Minor hockey parents trying to push for their kid or get a little extra attention or bump them up the list or anything?
Yeah, that happens. It happens. You know what? It happens more with the agents. It really does. And
right.
I try not to lean on the agent side as much because obviously their goal is fairly clear. It's to promote their player. Having said that, though, there's a lot you can get from the agents in terms of the background story. And I pride myself on trying to dig in the corners and find that story that not too many people know about or have with a little bit of a personal touch to it to try and humanize things a little bit. I think hockey fans can look at a guy and say, oh yeah, man, this guy's a great skater. Oh yeah, he's got a great shot. He's got good hands and those sorts of things. The general public can basically see that, but we try and, I try and dig a little further into that. So the agents become a big piece in trying to do that. Relationships with the parents, of course. I can tell you though, agents have called and said, hey, dude, what happened last year, last month in the draft rankings, he was sixth. This year he's 10th. What's going on? I mean, this month he's 10th. And I'm like, that's just the way it goes. Like, it's a fluid thing, and it's going to be more fluid this year than maybe it's ever been in the past.